I'm Paige Albiniak, editorial director of Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I am talking to Vico Sharabani. He is founder and chief creative officer of creative studio The Artery. Hello, Vico. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Paige. Nice to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Let's kick it off by telling me what The Artery does, what it is. What do you feel makes The Artery special in our industry?
So The Artery is a creative studio like you introduced us, but our DNA is such that we work across all platforms. So we have a very deep roots in visual effects and post-production, but we expanded over the years to production, branding, film, technology, etc.
And I know The Artery has a lot of emphasis on being cutting edge, on visual effects. We'll get into that a little bit more. But how did you initially get into this field? First, as you know, like a creative producer, I don't know so much if you guys are a branding agency per se. You definitely do some of that. But how did you get into this area? How did you get started?
I actually started as a sound engineer. I was trained as a sound engineer, and I applied everything that I learned.
If you'd like to come work for me, I've got some work for you.
Fantastic. So I'll make a full circle back to the sound engineering days. But the interesting thing about how I made the transition is that everything that I studied and I mastered in sound, I applied to picture. So if I mastered the EQ techniques, I applied the same thing to color grading. If I looked at the way that sound bounces from wall and studied acoustics, then I apply that to light and the way that light bounces between things. And when I moved to compositing, it was just like mixing for me. When I mixed multiple layers of sound, the singer behind the singer, the rhythm section, and behind it is the orchestra, it's the same things, same observations that I applied when I composited a green screen person into a cohesive environment. So that was like historically, that's how I started. And I kept on building, adding capabilities as an artist. And when I built my company, The Artery, I decided to build a company that is an extension of my characteristics. So we continuously master capabilities and add them to the arsenal of our tools. And that's why we are a creative studio, and we are not a branding agency, and we are not a production company, and we are not post-production, but we are doing it all in a very innovative way.
It's interesting because I've never thought about it like that. And I sort of dabble very, very, very lightly in all those areas. But it makes sense to me, actually, that how you edit sound would apply to how you edit color and motion and all that. One really cool project that you've worked on lately, and I wanted to talk about this at the top just to suck everybody in, basically, is Beyoncé's Homecoming, which is the film that captured her 2018 performance at Coachella. You mentioned just now that you trained as a sound engineer. Is that how you initially started working with Beyoncé? We don't have to get into the Beyoncé of it all, but I just think it's cool that you've done some of that work. So how did you initially start working for her?
Oh, we actually worked with her first in 2011 or 12 when it was her first HBO special, Life is but a Dream. Not, I didn't come from the sound. We actually were in contact with the editor and director on the show, co-director on the show. And, you know, I always feel like my background definitely helps in the conversation. So, yes, we do talk to people that are technical in a technical way. We do talk to finance people in a finance way. We do talk to the music people in the music way. Yeah, so it's important to have that deep understanding. This particular one was just a collaboration of rest of her team in Parkwood, which is her production company.
So do you think that it's your comfort level in all these different areas that sort of makes somebody who operates at the standard of Beyoncé, and that includes her whole team, is that what makes her feel continually comfortable with The Artery to keep bringing you back for these different projects?
I think if you look at the type of client that we have very high profile people that we work with, between the directors and producers and artists that we work with. I definitely think that there is a comfort level when you talk on a high level artistic conversation and not only as a service provider or very specific type of talent, I think that helps a lot, because then the directors are excited, the creative people are super excited, the producers feel comfortable, the CFO feels expected and understood. You know, each one of those players or parts need to be taken care of, having a company that can engage in all of those conversations at a high level is definitely, I think it's a place of comfort level for all of those clients.
So let's switch gears and talk about the campaign that you did for Mercedes, which is sort of the core of what we're going to talk about. For Mercedes, there's some choices that you guys made around this, but what was the initial ask of the client? And this spot, just so people know, it will be up on Brief. And also there's a behind the scenes video that will be up on Brief to give a little bit more context about this. But what was the initial ask from Mercedes for this spot?
The initial ask was to create a CG campaign for cars that we could not shoot. You know, one of the cars there is a $2 million car that you don't have access to just shooting.
Wait, why didn't you have access to it? If it's Mercedes' car, why don't you have access to it?
It's just very complex for the purpose of what we were doing, the budget and the schedule that we did. We couldn't get access to it. It's not like a car from a dealership. It's a very unique car that they don't make a lot of. The request was to create the car in CG. It was something that was done in the past, and many car commercials do that, but we decided to approach it, and the way that I approached it and sold it to the agency was to treat it like a film. I wanted to bring the best DP I could get from Hollywood, like Paul Cameron shot Westworld and Pirates of the Caribbean, and I wanted him to shoot this commercial. And I wanted to bring a seasoned editor like Michael Elliott that works with us, and he will edit the spot. It won't be just a CG department creating beautiful imagery, right? They really love this idea there was no solution of how will that actually work. And one thing led to another, and we collaborated with Neuralize, a company that our old CG supervisor built, basically. He built a virtual reality type of technology that allows collaboration in multiple locations and the creation of imagery at the highest level is second to none. So we collaborated with them in order to create a virtual camera crew, and we went into virtual reality from LA, New York, and Toronto, and we walked around the car, and we had like our shoot day. It was quite an amazing experience.
So when you guys were planning this, did you already have access to this software, or did you acquire the software for the purpose of this project?
The software was still in development, and luckily we were in Rob Mogat, who is supervisor for the job, and myself were great communication with Scott, who allowed us to use this technology, and basically we were the first ones in the world to use it. It was not available for the public back then.
Okay. And then did you have the hardware that you needed to accommodate this level of, because you've got remote production, it's virtual reality, the rendering is incredible. So did you guys already have the hardware in place to be able to run this?
Yeah, it was running on HTC Vive. There's no like a unique hardware needed. So okay. We had our strong computers. We could stream. The streaming capability was a part of the technology. The hardware was off-the-shelf hardware.
Wow, that's incredible that it can, when you guys have to go look at it just to get the sense of it, but it's incredible that you can run that off the shelf and considering what kind of real-time rendering is having to happen and stream.
Yeah, and Neuralize did an amazing job. They were just bought by Sony Imageworks a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. So that's a big deal for Scott and his team.
And the name of that is Neuralize?
Correct.
So it was always going to be this way. It was never like they said, hey, do something live action or come to a location. We're always going to do a computer generated version of this campaign.
Correct. But the two things that were unique about it was, one, bringing in the world renowned film crew in order to create it. And the second is the technology that allowed that collaboration in the virtual reality.
You know, you mentioned Paul Cameron, and I believe Michael Elliott, you said, was the editor, correct?
Correct.
So So was there ever concern about availability? Because I feel like getting people at that caliber, it's always hard to get into their schedule.
Yeah, so always. We never know when we get a brief if we will get Paul Cameron, right? Somehow the stars align for us well on this one. Paul and Rob also directed this spot. We got very lucky to have them. On the other hand, it's a consistent thing that our network is so big that we always find the right person for what we're looking for. I think that after 7 years, we feel more comfortable that it's happening.
So, and then in the behind the scenes video, there's, I believe it's footage of Paul shooting the spot in virtual reality. And so was that something he was familiar with, or it looked like it was something he sort of figured out as he went?
It was the first time he put goggles on, I believe. And after 4 hours, he took it off and he was so surprised to know that 4 hours went by. He said,
wow.
If I quote him, he says, I thought we were 20 minutes there. It was really amazing to see how the way that everything was set up, both on the software and the team that was assembled for this, everybody felt like a film crew. The jargon was there, the technical tools were there, programmed previously. So it really felt like a very familiar environment and process for everybody. It just was accelerated because we were able to run through so many different things without waiting for the grip or the producers or whatever happens on live action sets.
So let's set the scene a little bit from what I saw. So Paul puts on the goggles. It creates a virtual reality environment that includes this very high-end car. And he has a virtual reality camera. So he doesn't actually have a camera. It is a camera, but it's operating within this virtual reality environment. And within that environment, he is capturing footage and angles and images as he wants to, even though all of that is being created essentially within this computer-generated world. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Just crazy.
The world, he does have a camera and he can take possession of it or he can give it to his assistant cameraman. And the assistant cameraman, he will tell him, okay, I want a 24-millimeter anamorphic lens. And he will get it back just like he would get it on set, already set up, so he can look at it, and above it there is a monitor that shows him what the camera sees, and he just moves around with that particular lens and frames the shot. It's quite amazing how intuitive it was
Is it an actual lens in the camera, or is it the computer
creates the lens? It does not exist in the physical world.
Did Paul come out of it feeling like, I am in a weird mind warp now? Because I think that's how I would feel.
Yeah, certain parts of it, yes. There was a very particular moment that is in the behind the scenes video that he says, I'm afraid to walk. If you saw that. So at that moment, he said, he basically looked up and he said, wait, can you put me 20 feet up in the air with a, I can't remember what type of lens. And the guy said, sure. And the whole world collapsed between his, below his feet.
Wow.
So it felt, that was his real reaction on set when he said, wait, whoa, everything just
fell away.
So it did feel very, it did create very visceral reactions for everybody at certain points. And it was amazing that from the technical aspect, Neuralize built everything to feel as real and mathematically accurate from the lensing to everything else. We went in and we thought that the biggest thing is that we're replicating the real world. But within half an hour, all of those things of, can you put me up in the air? Can we go there? Can we explore that? Or even a moment that Paul said, I wish I had a crane that I can go from one side of the car to the other. And we were like, okay, we can shrink the car down, sit down, and just create it, move your hand about the smaller car. Or when you shoot a real car and you want to put the camera above the top of the car, you need all of those blankets and rigs and everything. In this particular case, Paul just went through the car because it's virtual stick his head up from above the car and he gets whatever angle he wants. So there were different things like that were a lot of fun finding and playing on set with.
Why was it important to do it so that it was like Paul was, he's acting like he's shooting actual footage within a virtual environment versus just creating those looks with, you know, computer generating those looks?
Yeah. So until the moment that you see somebody at his caliber requesting the lens that he wants and looking for the shot and moving slightly to the left, slightly to the right, up and down, and says roll camera, that little, that accuracy of where he wants to put the camera is something that with CG artist interfacing his ideas with a mouse is quite frustrating, you know, because he will never get exactly
it's
what
it's like giving the artist a paintbrush and saying, here, go ahead and paint. And you're, yeah, that's interesting.
Exactly. From a human interface point of view, it's much better than a mouse because that's how he used to frame the shots. He's not used to verbalizing it to a guy that does it through a mouse.
Right.
Into a computer, you know?
Right. So you could do it that way, but this is saying, like, here, you're the artist, so create the way you know how to do it, and you'll, and it's still a computer-generated result, but it's allowing him to work organically.
Exactly. The whole conversation is completely different, and it's super interactive, and you got, like, high-profile talent all seeing the same thing at the same time and discussing movement and direction and speed and trajectory. It's just a different type of experience when you create something.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so then he captures all this footage and all this imagery, and then the spot goes into post-production. So what is required at this point in post-production? I know there's a really cool, I don't know, it's sort of like a curtain effect over the car that was added in post. So all kinds of things? Yeah.
So we called it the silver blanket. That was Paul's idea to create it. Basically, what we got out of the virtual reality session was dailies. It was just like coming out of a set. Whatever he framed in the camera was captured and recorded, and that went to the editor, Michael Elliott, who cut the spot. Once the edit was done, the silver blanket and the rendering was finalized. So there was still a post-production process after the edit.
And is that something you guys did at the Artery, or did you bring in another agency to do that?
No, we did everything at the Artery.
Okay. And then in terms of like copywriting script, the voiceover, was that, did you guys also handle that, or how was that part?
No. That was the work of Merkley & Partners, the agency for Mercedes-Benz. They created an amazing campaign that was all very poetic from the copywriting point of view. I think that was our luck to get such foundation and be able to develop something that complements it, which is not something that you get every day in the advertising world.
Well, I think also that because it has the John Hamm voiceover and the same agency did the copywriting, it feels of a piece with the rest of Mercedes spots, which I've seen, you know, we've all seen a lot of those Mercedes John Hamm spots, I think, but it feels part of that overall campaign, even though it looks very different.
Totally. If anything, about this brand and that voice and the brand recognition that you get with all of their campaigns, I totally agree with you. They did something really well for having that consistent voice.
Have you been able to use this technology again?
No, we didn't do that again. Now it's at Sony ImageWorks, their product. We will see what it will mean, whether we'll be able to use it outside or it will become an inside in-house tool for them. But it's interesting to see that other things are popping out. Obviously, this was early 2018. It's almost 2 years ago. So we were really ahead of the curve. But right now, different things are happening. And I see people like Matt Workman, who works with a Unreal Engine, and people are developing different products that seem to be going in that direction of pushing the capabilities of virtual production. So I'm sure that we'll see much more in the very near future. Even Lion King just talked about using these type of workflows.
Who talked about it? Lion King?
Lion King. The Lion King was shot with the virtual production. We will see much more of that in the upcoming years.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. So is it something that you would recommend to other clients? And do you feel like, is there a cost savings to doing it? Or do you feel like it's kind of similar budget-wise?
It depends on what you're doing. I think that definitely there are cost savings because I don't see, if you compare it to live action, obviously there are cost savings because you're immediately in the post world.
Right, but, you don't have to travel everybody. You don't have to set up all the equipment.
Yeah, but it's like at the end of the day, it's not only about cost savings.
Right.
It's about the what is right for the job. Yeah, you can cut costs on live action. You can cut costs on post-production. We don't lead with the costs. We might reverse engineer an approach for the cost, but we don't lead with that in mind first. We try to figure out what is best for the end result, and then we figure out how to do it for the budget.
I think this is a good example of something that you talk about, which is championing the intersection of creativity and technology. I think this project sits right in the center of that. What does that mean to you, that idea? And how are you finding that the Artery is doing this in a way that other agencies in this space are not?
Yes, it is a good example because without the deep knowledge of the technology and the deep experience of the CG cars and the ability or connections in the film world and all of that, if we did not have the multifaceted, multidisciplinary environment that we have, we won't be able to come up with this type of solution. Most of our case studies are combining two or more disciplines or capabilities that are not trivial to be put together. And so I do think that we set ourselves to become an innovation-conducive environment. And I feel like it's proving itself to be quite powerful.
And in this case with Mercedes, it was a lot of people working together remotely. Is that a model that you employ a lot or think that you will be employing a lot going forward?
It's funny because we started with Virtual Studio in 2011 and we did amazing work back then, but it was premature for industry, as well as we needed to scale up our operations in New York because of the tax incentives. So for the long form portion of our work. At the end of the day, we have a very large studio in New York City, and there is value to being together in the same place. Maybe in the future, maybe with some capabilities, it really depends on the project. We really have that capability, and then we use it whenever it's needed.
So there's pros and cons of both. There's pros of being able to be remote, but there's also pros of, there are still pros to working together and being face-to-face.
Totally. If you need 15 people at the time crunch to work together and have a consistent output, it's much harder to manage that remotely currently. Or if the clients are in New York and they need to be a part of the process. These things, the immediate interaction is still very valuable. There are certain projects that you're designing something or you're animating something and you have the time to do it and all of that. And it's like, it's a different fit. But because we do everything of everything at a high level, we have to have both. The remote access to talent if we need to, or technology if we need to, and the local offices that are more traditional.
I think sometimes too, when you're working remotely versus working in person, so let's say you're working in person on a big project and you're bouncing ideas off people, you get a lot of information that I think you're not even aware that you're getting by body language or facial expressions, you know, that you might not get if you're doing it remotely.
Totally. Absolutely.
Although, I mean, it's maybe if it's on video, but I do think there's like an energy exchange that you get in person that you don't get remotely that I understand. I don't know. I just think it's interesting because technology is making it less and less necessary to be in person, but I think there's still quite a lot of value to it.
Totally. It's surprising every time that certain things, you feel like a video conference call can work out, but a meeting works much better.
Yeah. Are there any, so this is a very cutting edge technology you guys were working with here. Is there anything that you guys have been doing lately that you feel is cutting edge that you can talk about?
We've been doing something that is very interesting about scanning a fleet of antique cars and preparing them for a new experience. I hope to be able to share it with you in a month or so.
Okay, so not quite ready for prime time, but coming up.
Yeah.
All right, we'll look into that when that comes up.
And in totally different environment also, we worked with Echo, which is interactive video type of agency, and we've done something interesting for Christmas that was a Walmart experience that went on the web, had a very interesting technology behind it, and it felt like an interactive type of experience for kids to play with toys. It's a totally different sector or type of work, but we got all of those tech companies are something that is very interesting for us to keep on collaborating with.
So if you're a kid, you could go online to the Walmart site and play with toys in like virtual reality. Is that how that looks?
It's not virtual reality. It's actually behind it. It's triggering pre-prepared videos, but you have an interface that makes you feel like you're interacting with the different boxes, be able to choose them and grabbing them with a grabber.
It's like unboxing.
Like what?
Like unboxing, which is a big thing for
kids.
Yeah.
Exactly. Unboxing, but in a digital world.
That seems very dangerous for parents.
At the end of the experience, the kids got a list of their preferred toys. So it's like a Santa type of wish list. It will become dangerous when the kids get to purchase.
Yeah. When I was a kid, my mom would give me, I think it was the JCPenney catalog, which was a huge catalog, and I could go through it and she would see what I liked. And then I would get, that would help her decide what to get me for Christmas. So I see it like that, but on like a lot of steroids.
Yeah, totally.
Which is genius.
2019 version.
Yeah, exactly. With all of the stuff that you're doing, I feel like your answer is going to always be whatever's on the most cutting edge, but what is your favorite medium, technical or non-technical, to work in, to create in?
It's interesting because I started as an artist. So when we talk about creation, we're used to thinking about creating pixels or creating art or creating piece. But the art for me is not anymore just an image or a video or a film, but it's the environment that I'm building. That's for me the most interesting right now. Building an environment that was unique in the way that we approach the project was a big thing for me. And now scaling it is another big idea for creation forward.
So scaling it, like going back to the Lion King, like creating a whole place, a whole world.
Either that or the environment itself. So growing the team, growing the capabilities, growing footprint or geographically, etc.
So you're saying like part of it is that you just like the business, not the business, but the process of putting this all together, not just the actual creation of the piece, but also the building of it with the people.
Exactly. And business is not a bad word, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a separate piece of it than the actual going in and making the spot. You're saying that you also enjoy the entrepreneurial part of it.
100%.
Anything cool? I mean, you mentioned a couple things, actually, but anything cool coming up for you guys that you can mention?
I don't think that we can talk about that yet, but it's been an amazing year for us with very artistic films that we worked on. It started with Vox Lux with Natalie Portman, then Beyonce Homecoming, Midsommar that has been...
Oh, you did Midsommar. That's cool.
Yes.
Yeah, great reviews.
And,
uh,
and The Lighthouse that is coming right now, and The Farewell that is also.
Wow, you're in all the Oscar buzzy movies.
Exactly.
Wow, so, impressive.
Yeah, so we're very excited about that. I wish I could tell you a little bit more, but there are more in that type of niche of artistic films.
So I will tell our audience, go to brief.promex.org and you can see this Mercedes campaign that we talked about in the behind the scenes video. So you can see Paul in his virtual reality camera swooping around and capturing all of this. And then we'll all go see all these movies to see your work.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks, Vico. Bye.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's social media and community manager, edited this podcast. Video Helper provides the music. Digital content producer Kayla Marie Hardaway contributes to Daily Brief. Promax is rebranded to just Promax, so you can find us on Promax Global on Facebook and Promax_Global on Twitter and Instagram. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.